Welcome to the Self-Study Project. This is a podcast to deepen your reflection with co-hosts Stephanie Gibson and Jenna Beard.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Self-Study Project at theselfstudyproject.com. We're talking healthy body image and sex education for children and parents in today's podcast. And we have returning special guest Maylia, who is 14 years old. She joined us in another episode called Conscious Living with Kids. So definitely check that out. This is a tough episode to discuss, but given what's happening in the world, really for a long time, is just being brought to light right now, is an extremely important one. Our youth are being exposed to things long before we'd want them to, and some things we should never be exposed to, no matter what the age is. They should not be happening. Children are being used for the sexual dysfunction of adults in ways I don't even want to say here. In fact, Jenna and I had been discussing this podcast at length before deciding to move forward, and the biggest question that we had is, what details do we actually bring to voice? What atrocities happening in the world right now do we actually detail? And what we realized is that, as our podcast title reveals, we need to discuss the ways in which self-study and reflection can be taught to our youth in order to prevent this from happening to them. Jenna and Maylia, I'll turn it over to you guys to present your take on this very important and difficult topic.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. So I'm Jenna, Maylia's mother, and so I'll let her, of course, talk here in a moment. But yeah, this is such an important topic, and we spent quite a bit of time, you know, trying to figure out, like, how do we, you know, discuss this, and how, and what is going to be really useful for others to hear. Because just for an example, like, we really are conscious with our children. We barely have, you know, we don't even have a TV now in our home. We've had a TV before, but just had, you know, selective, you know, no like cable. And so it was just, you know, so much of our focus and attention was our kids being outdoors and having open conversations and discussing things. And so, you know, I feel like that it almost felt like there had to be, I had to say something, because if it's happening, you know, in my home where there was things that were, you know, inappropriately brought in a way, right, through these social media, we'll talk about different just ways in which children can maybe be exposed to things, maybe more than some of us parents even realize. So I'll let Maylia talk about kind of the part about how maybe they like Instagram, for example, or that influenced. Yeah.
The ways in which this has happened.
Yes.
Yeah. So I had Instagram pretty early, like when I was 9, maybe even earlier than that. And I was just on there with, because it was a social thing and my friends were all on there. But I saw that people would use it to role play. And, you know, I was 9. I thought that was fun, looked fun. So I made another account, and you would basically just role play as different characters, I guess. And
were you a dog?
I don't really know. Like, you would just, like, characters from movies, but I don't.
Okay.
But I, you know, it was fun and games until a couple experiences where people took a different turn on it. So it was just, I learned, you know, sexual vocab that was not appropriate, not respectful to the body. I saw images like that were not appropriate for me to be seeing at this age, or even it's not good for the brain when you're an adult. So. Mm-hmm.
And this was on Instagram?
Yeah, it was on Instagram.
Through like private profiles that you had to be friends with before you could see the photos?
Oh yeah, it was direct message. So you would just role play in the direct message with like one person or two people, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in role-playing, that could be very fun and engaging, could be, you know, taking on, I'm just going to pick a random movie, The Lion King, and someone's Mufasa and someone is, you know, the other characters, and you start talking and you know, engaging. Or is it more like, you know, what is role-playing like? I'm not familiar with it, and I wonder if all parents are.
It's like, I used to play a game called Animal Jam. It was like an online, like, game for kids, and basically you would just, you know, you would be a dog, and then you would just, like, play, you know, like my mom said she used to play house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so somebody would be the mom, and somebody would be the dad and the kid.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So mm-hmm. It's basically like that.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, like, this guy wanted to take it to another level, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we don't know how old this person is or anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what was so shocking, right, because we only had Instagram, thought that was kind of a more mellow thing to be on. So just for parents out there, just knowing that pornography is pretty rampant. So she saw photos that she shouldn't have seen. And then also just vocab, like she mentioned, of descriptions and kind of basically playing out sexual acts. And so here she is, very young, already learning things that are way beyond her time. And so what that's done for her psychology, like the mental mind, and what we've had to, like, work through, is pretty significant. So, and here it is, not even in person, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's online, but here she didn't even realize the seriousness nor the effect that it fully had, actually. So she kind of kept this secretive for a while, didn't really think, well, I don't know, like, you know, here it is, you know, we played house when we were kids, you know, sometimes things go, you know, can get inappropriate playing house, even, mm-hmm. when, you know, back in the day. Mm-hmm. But this is to a whole, I think, another level, actually. So she didn't realize the seriousness, nor did she realize that she was actually being approached by a predator, really. I mean, a fully grown man, or some, you know, an adult, because the language in which she described would obviously be definitely an adult that knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just shows that, like, that there's so many avenues in which this stuff can happen to our children. We know, you know, sometimes they talk about Boy Scouts or, like, you know, team sports or ways that children can be taken advantage of. But just noting that also online can be another
mm-hmm.
a huge way, because it's just very broad, very open. And then also there's there's so much access to so much on the line. So mm-hmm.
And it's so anonymous. It can seem to be so anonymous. And even with, you know, things like video games, there are chat programs while you're playing a video game like World of Warcraft or something like that. And, you know, I've known people to play the game and talk about they make a female character, and it's probably some, you know, man making the female character, and then they can, you know, there's flirtation and inappropriate things happening there. But even just, yeah, the anonymity of being behind the screen, we see that with bullying, you know, cyberbullying. People get so brave when they're behind their computer, and they get as if it isn't real. And to me, that's part of what is so important is to maybe convey and to teach, and is the sacredness of this discussion, the sacredness of the interaction that should be transcendent, you know, to intimacy. Intimacy means into me, you see. So it's like, how many people do you really want to reveal yourself in such a way that they see everything about you, who you are, what shame you've felt, what guilt you have felt, what makes you joyous, what makes you happy. And then, you know, that by the time a person has reached that level where you're like, into me, you see, I will allow that, only then would maybe the discussion of these intimate things be something that you're possibly ready for, that you know, and a shared mutual experience. But I think that so often, I've had my experiences as well, unfortunately, as a youth, where, you know, people in a role that did not belong taking action in the ways that they did took advantage. And what's so crazy is to acknowledge that when you are a kid, well, actually, when you are a human, you are a curious creature. That's the whole point, is to be curious and to be interested in new things. And you don't know what you like until you've tried it or you have enough intuition about the experience. So the biggest thing is that we children who are curious as they are, and there's this new thing, and there's this there's not only some sort of positive reinforcement that you're getting, entertainment that you're getting, curiosity that you're getting. And then unfortunately, because the children don't necessarily know better until they've done it, sometimes there's even enjoyment, and it's all still wrong, because we know that if any adult or any person of any age really tries to make you responsible for something that they are doing, then that's the number one sign that something is wrong. So, you know, how do we talk to our kids? How do we talk to other adults? Maybe that's something, and we haven't really talked about this, Jenna, is, you know, what conversations should we be having with our fellow adults to remind them that this is wrong behavior, that this is, that whatever the readily available access to pornography, the way that women have been looked at for such a long time, with objectivity. And quite frankly, I was watching a period piece recently that, you know, about history and queens and kings of England, and they were selling their children off to be married, giving the dowries, given children when they were 9 to, you know, 15 years old. That's the time you give your children to be married. And so it's been done for a very long time, but the transition is the recognition of sacredness of the intimacy, and teaching perhaps healthy body image. I don't know, you know, I think you made a good point, Jenna, about if it can happen to you and your family, with how open and, you know, how in a much more enlightened and self-aware way than I bet you see very many people parenting, then what questions should maybe parents be asking? Or maybe to Melia, you know, how you didn't talk about it first, you know, was it, do you think you knew at the time that it was inappropriate? Or did you kind of feel like, well, I did that, I handled it, we're all good, and I don't need to really bring it up? Like, how do we bring light to it? Either from the parent's perspective of saying, you know, what are we supposed to look for? What kind of behaviors should we look for that kids might be crossing the line? And then maybe from the kid's perspective is, you know, when do you know it's wrong, and what do you do about it?
For me, I didn't really realize the seriousness, like my mom said, and I just thought, like, I mean, there was a time where I was like, I know this is not good, mm-hmm. but it still sparked curiosity, and, like, you know, I was going through puberty, so that's kind of mm-hmm. that makes it harder. So,
right.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it because of the guilt, and, like, I'm supposed to be, like, in my head I was thinking, like, I'm supposed to be the Qigong person, I'm supposed to be a good person, and, like, I didn't want people to think of me any differently.
Yeah.
Because of what happened to me and what even I chose to engage in, because, you know, I could have deleted the account sooner, mm-hmm. and I could have gotten out of it, but it was just the programming that the person did that made it really hard
mm-hmm.
to get out of that situation.
Wow. You just nailed that word. I love that word that you just said. And that's the programming. There's so much programming happening from early on that we're not even aware of. Like that doll that was in the media recently, a troll doll with a button that makes, you know, pleasuring sounds. It wasn't even marketed to be there, and yet that's priming, that's programming youth from the get-go to look for their buttons, and that's inappropriate. So that's a very manipulative programming. Like, that is a very good point.
Yeah
And I've since you know, really done quite a bit of research on this, and one of the things is that the porn industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. you get people hooked earlier and earlier and earlier, which they are doing. We are getting so, you know, we would have been so shocked. I mean, we are shocked still. But, you know, pornography, when I was growing up, you know, it was like, you'd see sometimes at my friend's house, their dad would have, you know, a Playboy magazine or something. And I remember going, looking at it and, you know, thinking, I wonder what's in there, you know, like, but I remember seeing just a few of the pages and I felt kind of yucky just because, again, the distortion of how women should look and then how, you know, you see maybe your mom or your sister or whatever. And so there's so much too that I feel like then was like, oh, that's acceptable. We just allow for, you know, it's a normal, pornography is normal. And so it's interesting because, you know, in Europe, there, I did some research, and so there's a lot more nudity actually in Europe. So you see people naked on the beach. But what's actually really beautiful about that, and even seeing statues and art of people nude, is that you're seeing them actually in the way in which they are, not more in a normal, like not distorted fashion, where when you're seeing something from like a pornography standpoint, it's very distorted. It's often, you know, surgeries have been done to allow for, you know, that look, you know, and so, and when it's caused so much problems within relationships. But so they actually found that in Europe, the pornography is way down compared to the US. So one of the things is thought, well, because pornography, when you see nudity, you don't have as much like, oh, I need to, you know, there's that curiosity, but you see it. So you're like, well, there's nudity. Okay, I know what those body parts look like. And so unless maybe shame in that. So, and I, you know, as a parent, I'm like, well, that's what I've always thought, like, just give her the best, you know, scenario. When I'm looking in the mirror, don't ever say things that are, you know, feel shameful or saying that my body doesn't look good. So, you know, it's, thought that we were doing a lot of positive work, but although I can tell from what, just talking with her, that, what had happened though, and I think that this is what all viewers should know or be aware of, is that what had happened is that she got exposed to things that do pique natural interest, right? And so then it starts actually an arousal process, right? So then she's seeking for it outside of that situation. So she's getting curious, you know, just maybe searching pictures, of course, what comes up. And so then that's what kept it going. So, and we've done a ton of work about, on that, because then she was like, you know, there's all that shame about why she did that. And so then we had great conversations. So about the natural body's response, how there's healthy intimacy, and then how there's disconnected type of, portrayal, but it really comes down to, we have to be super aware right now, because it's this pornography in one way or another is infiltrating our world one way or another. It's like there's the exposure is almost hard not for it to happen. So just extra aware.
You can't even Google like the words blue sweater. I mean, I just randomly picked those words, but blue sweater without somewhere down the images it being something pornographic. And it, you're right. It is the way that bodies are portrayed and the sexualization of like everything is creating disassociative behavior where they, and especially children who have been molested and grow into being adults, that disassociation, that the thing that you have to teach yourself as a child that's been abused is, you know, don't let that feel good. Don't let this be interesting because it's wrong. Let me not really be here. And it teaches them to no longer really be in their body. And then when you become an adult and you're trying to be intimate with somebody and you're trying to reach that level of intimacy and pleasure, it's hard to go there because you taught yourself so long not to. And so it is fascinating what this does, you know, to our youth, to our mind, to our bodies. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that Europe thing. We were just at Crater Lake up here in Oregon. And we were sitting on these Adirondack chairs at the lake and it was gorgeous. And this family who was speaking Russian, which sounds really cool, by the way, they walk by and these two women are wearing two-piece bikinis and they don't have your standard model looking figures, and even, to the point of probably having some diabetic symptoms. And I brought this up to my husband and I said, I just love that there's this man wearing an American flag pair of shorts, by the way. And he walks in and he's got a very large beer belly, and they're walking around in their two-piece bikinis, and there's no sexualization, nor was there any behavior in body language to watch her trying to modify for what roles are there and what posture she needs to sit in order to look right, and none of that. And I can remember living in Germany and I went to a spa. I thought I understood the language well enough, and I read the sign and I thought it said clothing optional beyond this point. And what it actually said was no clothing beyond this point. And I go in wearing my bathrobe, and I was going to the cafe, so I was allowed to wear the bathrobe, but everywhere else there's no clothes. And I'm looking as I'm sitting there eating my salad in the cafe, where you are supposed to wear clothes because there's food, a bathrobe at least. And there are children of all ages, men and women of all shapes and sizes and ages, walking around everywhere naked, in the saunas and in the pools and running on the slides. And then there's hot saunas outside. And I can remember I was later sitting in my own section where I finally got comfortable to be, clothesless. And two, what had to be 12, maybe 10 to 14 year old boys, twin boys, just run by and they cannonball and they're nude. And it was so eye-opening to me to see that there was nobody gawking at each other. There was nobody even paying attention to anyone else other than who they came with. The parents of those kids are naked too. And it was so fantastic and so healthy and something that, being from the United States, I could not relate to. It just didn't quite, it's just not the norm here, but you really, to be aware that there was zero sexualization in that experience, that the human body, and I think that's part of it too, is like you said, the media's imposition of beauty and pornographic and just media and marketing and the suggestion of what looks attractive and how we're supposed to use those bodies. I mean, there's phallic symbols put subliminally into ice cubes on alcohol ads of naked women, usually in alcohol ice cubes in. And I took a class on marketing in college that actually shows this to you, and it's subliminally reaching you. And then there are phallic symbols put into Disney movies, and it's just put everywhere all the time to influence our tip towards everything being sexualized. And that is very difficult. And it's like, what do we do? Take, like you said, there's no TV, and then it was Instagram. So I mean, I think the biggest thing here, and I'd like your guys' opinion on this, is that some things are probably going to happen. You know, things that maybe afterwards you realize this might not be appropriate. And the biggest thing that we have to overcome, which is as much my responsibility as it is yours, Jenna, as it is the people listening, as it is Maylia, is that we have to stop shaming people. Whether it's about this or it's about whether or not you are wearing a mask or not, who you vote for and who you don't, who, what kind of car you can afford to drive, what kind of shoes you can afford to buy or choose to wear, or what wrongs you might, in your own mind, what wrongs you may have created, they are meant for an opportunity to grow. And hopefully they aren't so severe that you don't have the opportunity to grow. Because everything is here for us to grow from. And to me, it comes down to the idea, like Maylia said, there was such guilt that she felt. And then there was shame. Guilt is a personal thing. Shame, in my opinion, is imposed by other people. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I know there's, that's a good point, huh? Like I know that there's a healthy amount of shame that we can feel based on things, or guilt, but it's how we handle it. And I think that there's such a good, you know, it's like coming to solutions, you know, what are we going to do from here? And so when we look at it, a bigger perception is that, you know, children, ourselves included, we're always going to be learning from that which isn't actually in our alignment. So that's actually the best way we learn. Like, wow, that didn't feel great. Or gosh, I felt shame or guilt around that. And so when even talking with me, Leah, I was like, gosh, that's powerful how our body knows what to do. And it tells us. So for me, I didn't mean to add more shame to her shame or add more guilt to her guilt. I just asked her to feel it, because one of the things that I wanted to be really, really mindful of is that she allows herself to feel it, and that she also doesn't hold it for a lifetime. And then it lets it. And I told her, I said, this could really affect your personal relationships, or you can make it something that really empowers you. Mm-hmm. It could be one or the other. And so it's always a choice. And I said, sometimes when we're in the moment and we just feel the feels, feel them. Don't even try to change it. Just allow yourself to kind of like really be with that emotion, because it has actually a lot to teach us. And so she's been journal writing, letting things come through, because we just, my main thing, I didn't want to get it stuck in her, you know, tissue and in muscle memory. And in yoga, we call it samskaras or samsaras. So that was really important. And I think that another point I was thinking about is that there's just so much around kind of letting ourselves think that so much is just okay, with children being, you know, even online so much, or you know, video games is another one. And there's the characters that they make are very distorted. And as parents, let's be really mindful that that's not okay. And even having the conversation, isn't this interesting? How, what is this trying to portray? How, and I have very open conversations that when you come in a relationship with someone and you think the body is going to look like that, is that going to create connection or disconnection, you know? And really getting to the bottom of it. But I think that when we have an understanding that the world and the media is projecting it and trying to kind of create this disconnection, I think that we will be even more mindful and even more aware to have conversations with our kids. Like, why, you know, is this article or this, you know, advertisement sexualizing this? I mean, I have this conversation even with my youngest one that's 11, and you know, and so they realize that, you know, most of it is, what are they trying to sell? What are they trying to, so I let them be aware that there's a lot of addictions in our planet, and that that's purposely done because there's a lot of money in addiction, whether it's shopping, whether it's, you know, the beauty products we need to buy. Because, you know, Melia was just horrified when we were walking down in Santa Barbara. And I walked by the shop, and we love Santa Barbara State Street. And so we were just doing some shopping, and this one gal, you know, pulls us kind of in. They're kind of a little bit of, you know, obnoxious, a little aggressive. They bring us in to do a free sample for a facial thing. And she says, what don't you like? How did she word it, Melia?
She said, when you look in the mirror in the morning, what do you not like about yourself?
Oh my gosh.
Like, literally, she said that. And I'm like, who does this woman think she is? Like,
wow. Yeah. And trying to capitalize on a negative body image. They're trying to capitalize on that. Yeah.
They were. And it's easy to get like, well, I mean, I don't love this part right about myself. So, but Melia, when we had a conversation, and she was just afterwards, she was just, couldn't believe it. And then, you know what? I was like, I'm proud of you for thinking, how wrong is that to emphasize one's, you know, imperfections, you know, that kind of thing. But
Yeah. And it is so hard, because even as a, you know, as a health coach working with people in my programs, and as adults, people have such negative self-image, and it's so hard to discover when that started. And therefore, when, as an adult, you have these opinions of yourself, and they are not motivated by wellness, they are motivated, again, by shame. I firmly believe that guilt is something that we can feel somehow on our own, and we don't really know where it comes from, whereas I think shame is completely taught. Otherwise, you know, children went around naked, not having any shame for it. They aren't taught to feel shameful yet. There's a difference between modesty and, you know, nudity, obviously. But that I think that when we capitalize or when we make changes, like I have people joining my program, and I always ask what their motivation is, and if it's due to their, you know, they're fat, or they're, you know, they're not loved by their partners, or it's motivation other than I want to feel the best that I can feel, and I want to be the healthiest I can be, then it's not appropriate motivation, and there's some healing that needs to take place as a result. Well, I shouldn't say not appropriate motivation. I should say that there needs to be a revision of motivation. Otherwise, there's something programmed in there that's unhealthy. And like you had talked about, with samskaras and yoga, is the awareness that this kind of experience is going to, if not properly healed emotionally, is going to create a second and first chakra imbalance. And if it continues over time, it's even going to create the bottom four chakra imbalance. And those chakras are what root you to the earth, and the heart chakra connects you to the heavens. And that sense of security and safety and foundation is your first one. Your sense of passion and sexuality and creativity and joy and childlike nature in your second. Your sense of power. Every single physical ailment you will ever encounter, every state of dis-ease you will ever have, is a misallocation of power. And so we have to own our power. We have to know who we are, the I am, the I will, and the sense of personal power. And then the heart chakra, the sense of love. So much self-love that I can't let you treat me that way. So much self-love that I won't go down that direction with you. So much love for other people that I won't cause anyone else harm. And to me, for adults listening, for even people who might have experienced something wrong, maybe you've grown from it, maybe you're still doing it, is that question of recognizing that whatever your religion is, whatever faith you have, and this is something I've read about in The Anatomy of the Spirit with Carolyn Miss, where she talks about whatever God is to you, even if you don't know what that means, or you're not sure who that is if you could have this sense of matrimony, this sense of marriage to yourself, and that promise that you give to another, give it to yourself. How often would you perhaps no longer let yourself down with the goals you have? I'm not going to do this anymore. If you made that promise to someone else, so often we will keep it. But when it's to yourself, we break it all the time. But if we had more sense of that power, and that sense of honor, and that sense of no one can shame me kind of a thing, I'm not going to adopt your shame. I think that we wouldn't do so many things harmful to other people, because that's really where it starts, is it's how you're treating other people. And Malia, what would you say to other kids who have had experiences that maybe they're afraid of getting in trouble, and maybe they have that sense of shame, or maybe something has gone, you know, even to the point of legality. You know, children, the unfortunate truth is that you probably know children in your school, in your life, that have been molested, that maybe have other friends of their own age doing inappropriate things. So what would you hope that they could do to find help or to change and grow?
First, I would, tell them that it's worth it in the end to tell somebody about it, whether it's even like a close friend. First, like, I'll eventually tell your parents, but it's because it's gonna come up anyway. And I lived for a while thinking, like, oh, I mean, this is just, I'm not gonna tell anyone about this in the back of my subconscious. Like, oh, this, it's fine. I didn't really take it seriously. But I realized and unraveled all of the traumas and the pain from it, that it would be stored and it in me, and it would affect everything that it was, and like maybe my relationships in the future experiences. that it was totally worth it when I started talking about it. Of course, it was hard and it was, you know, emotional for me, but if I stored it all in my body and in my mind, it would have affected me like mm-hmm. way more than this, maybe even the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or because of the situation.
Right. Yeah, Amelia, will you share how it felt to actually share with your really close friend and with me? Because I remember Amelia really thinking, gosh, people are not going to think of me the same. And I think that keeps us back from, and I had to actually talk to Amelia quite a bit about, like, you know what, Amelia, you don't maybe realize this, but we all go through life and none of us come out without some type of trauma or so it's always really important that I tell this with all my daughters is that we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. So we don't have room to judge and we don't maybe understand. And so just, talking about how you felt when you finally did talk about it. I mean, I know it was painful, but then it felt like a little bit like relief, right? Or
you tell me. To you.
Right. To you. Like, did you feel good when you shared with a friend?
Oh, yeah. Like, sharing it with my mom was, of course, like, really beneficial. But it was really special sharing it with my close friend. And mm-hmm. she was just so supportive about it. And she was like, you know, it was interesting to see it from other people's point of view, because it was similar to my mom's and she never heard my mom's point of view. And she was just like, that is so disgusting that people use children like that to just for their own like benefits. And, you know, mm-hmm. and she was like, I'm so sorry about that. And just so supportive. And a few weeks before, I wouldn't have thought that she would have been like that, but wow. sharing was super beneficial for me. And it created intimacy and like relationships yeah. with your friends and with your mom and parents. Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful outlook. I'm so glad that you had that experience and that you have that person, because I relate to that, you know, being a holistic health practitioner and a coach to an online program. There was a 14 years of vegetarianism and maybe dietary perfection from the outside, and I led that life, and then through as much grief and loss and traumas I experienced over the course of the last 7 years, there was a window of time where I ate gluten, I ate sugar, I brought back in meat, I gained weight where I had not gained weight in a good 15 or so years. There was so much difference that I was living that I can tell you, you know, I can't even tell you the number really of people that I lost as followers watching me go through that because of their judgment and because of the contrast to what I know is best, but I wasn't able to maintain that sense of strength. And then those who have stuck by me and watched that other part, you know, come back, or me and Jenna, for example, that, you know, when my mom died, Jenna and I had known each other for years before that, but there was a certain breakdown of my shell that happened when my mom died. And there was such grief that I couldn't even hold it. And in one-on-one yoga, Jenna and I got closer in ways it was like the universe had, we obviously contracted this before, but we only really started getting that close. And there are things that Jenna and I have told each other we wouldn't tell other people that have made us closer. And there's no judgment. And there's a person like that out there for everybody. And sure, sometimes you let go of people, like some of the people who, like, well, I'm not going to follow her. She's obviously, you know, whatever. I'm human. That's what I am. And
yes.
And there is, and I say this at retreats that we lead all the time, when I'm the one crying, telling a story, is like, and I say it because I have to work with it apparently more often than I'd like to be done with this lesson, but apparently I'm not, is where I sometimes say, hey, I'm supposed to be here to help you ladies feel healed. And every person has always told me, thank you for sharing your vulnerabilities, because it lets us know you're human. That's what it does. And like you and your friend, Melia, and you and your mom, and then me and Jenna, it's like, when you finally open yourself up to those people, your tribe finds you. And that's the people who have gone through the dirt and come out the other side. And those people know more than anyone else not to judge, not to shame, not to bully, and to know that love and curiosity, and that's what we're all needing, and we want that person to be able to share with. And if you have a person that you want to share this with and they don't receive it as well, do know that your parents are only teaching you, well, sometimes they've grown, with their traumas from their childhood. They can only do as good and surpass their own traumas in the way they've learned how. And if they never learned how, because their parents passed on traumas to them and they're parenting you with their traumas, you can reparent yourself. You can find friends like Melia's friends. You can talk to other people. If you need to talk to us, the selfstudyproject at gmail.com. There is someone there to listen to you. And what you need to know is that we cannot feel shamed for other people's guilts and shames. No one, you know, the idea of shaming me for going back to eating plant to animals and going back to plants, it's not your right to shame me. It's not your right to shame Melia, and it's not your right to shame anyone. And just be there for people, you know, listen to them, because there's so much distortion of body image, and come at it from a place of wellness. I don't know. What other input do we have on this? This is such an important topic. I want to do it justice, but I'm like, there must be more to say.
I know. There is a lot to it, but I like the way that this all went and how it all came together, because it's such an important message. And I liked what you said about just, I'm human. And that's something that we at this time, because I can tell, you know, 2020 has really taught us a couple things, maybe a couple more, that we really do have a whole lot of healing when it comes to guilt and shame. And so on a root chakra level, you know, just remembering it in every way, that if we have the need to shift that sense of accountability to others, what are we masking for ourselves, you know? And so and just being mindful and conscious of our own actions, and that our actions do in fact matter. And so everything that we put forth into the collective consciousness does matter. So when we stand up and say, you know what, I'm not going to buy into body images like that. I'm going to stand tall and firm in my own radiant beauty. That matters like a whole lot. It matters for your life and the lives of maybe whoever is around you that gives them permission to love themselves. We're seeing more and more of that, and I love that as well. So keep bringing in the light. Keep bringing in, also shining the light on the dark, because right now 2020 is so much about that, with human trafficking and all these things that we're diving into and learning more and exposing, is to remember to keep shining the light on the dark. We don't ignore it. We don't say, oh, I, you know, and some things are hard to handle, so we take it little bites at a time, but that we are here to do this for a reason. We need a better world for our children and for the, so every little action matters. So whatever piece of light and love we're bringing in does in fact make a big difference.
And I just thought of one other thing that was very important to convey to youth in this experience, is that they are not to blame. Blame and the guilt for what harm it might cause family members, if something's happening within a family, if you know, it's a friend and you don't want to get the friend in trouble, all of that, the person in this experience is not, there's no blame to be cast from things like that natural curiosity. And where the responsibility lies is in the person who's telling the other person that they're responsible for what they're doing. That's that first sign. So just know that if you have something to share, something's not quite right in your world, know that blame is, there's no room. Don't fear the blame, and know that it is not your fault, no matter what happens, of you coming forward with anything that happens. People should be more responsible to themselves, and it is not your fault if they were not. Okay. Well, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you want to reach out to us, the selfstudyproject at gmail.com. Melia, thank you for being you and for sharing what you've experienced. It's going to help so many. And Jenna, good job being a mom and a fellow human and friend to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Self-Study Project, a podcast to deepen your practice through reflection, with co-hosts Jenna Baird and Stephanie Gibson. Subjects cover holistic health, nutrition, yoga, philosophy, spirituality, astrology, parenting, relationships, conscious living, sustainable practices, and so much more. At no time does this podcast offer medical advice and is for educational purposes only. It remains your decision to pursue any information and do not hold your hosts or their guests liable. More information available at theselfstudyproject.com.